Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, longer. Let's do it.
All right. And so we shall. 888-914-9149. If you call that number now, you should be able to get on the air. They get tight than the lines do. So 888-914-9149. Molly in Green Bay, thanks for holding. So we're talking about your husband who seems to have fallen away from his Catholic faith. The two of you each had a prior marriage. The church declared nullity on those two marriages. You're now married together in the church. Your husband, ostensibly a Catholic, has sort of fallen away, doesn't go to Mass anymore, and now is telling you that he doesn't believe in man-made rules and he doesn't believe in Catholic stuff because all he needs is the Bible and loving Jesus, and he seems to be getting this stuff from YouTube. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So a couple of thoughts crossed my mind. The first one would be that, and I'm not, obviously, I don't know you, I don't know him, I don't know anything more than just what we're talking about, but I will propose to you the possibility that this is not the real reason, that there may be something in his life, could be pornography, you know, who knows what it is, I'm just thinking out loud here, for which this is an excuse. In other words, I don't want to go to Mass, I don't believe in that Catholic stuff anymore, because he is not willing or ready to part with something else going on in his life that's creating a cognitive dissonance. This often happens, often, where people say, I just don't like the Catholic Church, I don't want to go there anymore, I don't believe in these man-made rules. But the real reason below the surface is not that. Because if you do believe it, and you do, you know that you should go to Mass, and you have some secret sin in your life, as Jesus says, you can't serve two masters. You'll love one and hate the other. And in this case, we human beings are really very predictable that if there's something hidden, some hidden sin going on, usually the first casualty is going to Mass, praying, being Catholic the way you normally would, because the two are not compatible. And if you love God more than you love the thing going on under the surface, you get rid of the thing under the surface and you stay with God. If you love the activity or the sin out of sight more than you love God, well, then God is the first casualty in going to Mass and praying. Mm-hmm. So I'm not accusing anybody, but I am saying in my own experience, I've seen this happen a lot. So just be aware that that may not be the real reason. It may not be what he's seeing on YouTube. But let's say it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say it is. Let's say he's being genuine and he has gotten himself entangled in false teachings and, you know, things interpreting the Bible that are not biblical. Well, there are ways to diffuse that too. And I think in that case, what you would need to do is to zero in on what are the specific things. What specifically do you object to? And mm-hmm. he says, I don't believe in the man-made rules.
Okay, yeah, so the papacy and the whole lineage. And, you know, he says, you know, the popes, they're just people. And why do they make all these rules?
Right. Well, there are different ways to answer that question. One way to do it is do a little jujitsu and say, well, you know, do you obey the traffic laws in the state of Wisconsin? Yeah, I guess I do. Well, why? Those are just a bunch of man-made rules. Do you obey the law of the land, you know, in terms of you got to pay taxes, you've got to not murder people, you've got to, you know, all the things that the law enjoins upon us as citizens, Do you seek to obey those? Well, yeah. Well, why? Those are just man-made rules. And the point is, you want to bring to the surface that this phrase, this is sort of a thought-stopping epithet, man-made rules. We live in a world of man-made rules. You can point out to him, you're a man, and you're making a rule for yourself. You're living by a man-made rule that you don't think you need to go to church on Sunday. So the point is to bring to the surface this issue of what is inherently wrong with the man-made rule. There is nothing inherently wrong with it. He may say, well, I disagree with that. Then you could say, well, then let's discover if this so-called man-made rule actually came from a man alone, or did it come from God through men? And Jesus, being God, he told the apostles, Matthew 28, to go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. So we have a duty, if we really want to be believers in Jesus and followers of Jesus, we have a duty to heed, to listen to those teachings that the Lord gave his church in and through the apostles and their successors, the bishops. Jesus says in Luke 10:16, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. So simply put, he's speaking there to the apostles, and he's saying, if somebody rejects your teaching that comes from me, then they're really rejecting me. So this puts the person like your husband in a difficult position, because he has to say, well, I love Jesus. I just want to follow Jesus. And Jesus says, okay, if you want to follow me, listen to the church that I established. Well, I don't want to do that, Jesus, because that's just a bunch of man-made rules. Well, he who listens to them listens to me. He who rejects them rejects me. Yeah, Jesus, but, you know, that's just man-made stuff. It's incoherent. So when he really takes into account what Jesus taught in the scriptures, he hopefully will see that Jesus did not pass out Bibles and say, okay, everybody, have a great life. Read the Bible and just be a nice person and think happy thoughts and everything's going to be great. No. He established a church, and he gave the church sacraments, and he gave the church teachings, and he gave the church a way of life so that we can truly be followers of Jesus. We're not fans of Jesus. I mean, your husband's like a fan. I love Jesus. He's great. And Jesus says, well, pick up your cross and follow me. Why do you say to me, Lord, Lord, and do not do what I command you? And that's one of the weird things about a lot of people. They're really just fans of Jesus. They're not followers because they won't follow.
Yeah. And he grew up, he was a cradle Catholic and went to Catholic grade school, and he says, I know enough about the Bible because I've been going to church all my life. I've heard enough. So I don't know if he actually ever really read the Bible or read even the Gospels, you know.
Yeah, through. I don't think he knows nearly as much as he thinks he does.
Or right,
as much
I agree.
As he's telling himself.
And he says that if he just has a personal relationship with Jesus, that he's good. That's all he needs.
Yeah. And just, you know, you could point this out to him and say, where does Jesus say that? Husband of mind, where does Jesus say that, actually? Mm. He'll have no clue, and the reason is because Jesus didn't say that. What Jesus did say is, the wise man is the one who hears these words of mine and does them. He's like a man who builds his house on a rock, and you know about the storm and all that. The foolish man, he says, is the one who hears these words of mine and does not do them. And he's the one who builds his house on sand, and the house collapses. So it seems like what we're dealing with here is he's no longer a follower of Jesus. He's now a fan of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is just all right with him. But sounds like he's not willing to take seriously what Jesus said on all these different issues. If he's rejecting the Eucharist, for example, oh, that's just a man-made rule. Well, Jesus is the one who established it. And Jesus said, if you do not eat my flesh and drink my blood, you do not have life within you. Jesus said that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many, it really, if there were time, and I know there's not, but if there were time and we were to go through every single one of his objections, we could easily show that he just doesn't want to follow Jesus. He wants to do it his way. He wants to be a fan, not a follower. So at least we've identified, what two possibilities might be. Either this isn't the real reason, or if this is the real reason, he's just completely entangled himself in these shallow, dumb, unbiblical arguments. No disrespect to him. I'm sure he's a fine guy, but I mean, he's going down a path of just confusion. And it's self-serving, because if it gets you off the hook, if it's like, well, I can rationalize not having to live a life of virtue or a life of obedience or a life of being a follower of Jesus, because I can convince myself that everything's great and I'm a fan of Jesus. Two thumbs up for Jesus. Yay. That can be satisfying to some people, but that's obviously not what Jesus wants. So my thought now is, like, practically speaking, what do you do? A few things come to mind. Encourage him to give me a call. Encourage him to listen to the program. Encourage
him. I would
love
if he would call you.
Oh, I would welcome it. And I mean, we would have a wonderful conversation, and he would be warmly welcomed and respected for sure. But even if he just listens to the program, you know, you may say, how about a 30-day challenge? Listen to this program for 30 days and see if you don't feel differently about this. Give him good books. Give him digital downloads or even CDs, if anyone still has a CD player. People like Dr. Scott Hahn, who are very good. Scott Hahn's very good, very articulate, very effective at sharing the faith and energizing people. Things like that could be helpful to him.
Yeah, I was thinking about having him read Scott Hahn's Rome Sweet Home.
Yeah, that's a great book. It's a great book. To have, in other words, to ply him with information. Catholic Answers has got plenty of even free materials, like tracts and things that you can get digitally, like PDF documents. And so if you were to pinpoint specific issues, he has an issue with the papacy. I wrote a whole book on the topic called Pope Fiction. Not trying to sell you a book. I'm just saying there's so many resources out there that are tailor-made for these specific issues. It's we live in a wonderful time now where we have so many resources available, but I would start infusing the situation with some of these things for him. Pray for him, obviously.
Okay.
Do you have any you know, good, strong Catholic male friends that you and he know that maybe you can encourage him to talk to them, guys in the parish or something like that, or a good priest in the parish, anything like that?
Yeah, I have somebody in mind. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Try all that. Try everything. Okay. Try everything, and something at some point will work. Obviously, it's the grace of God before all of these things. So anyway, I hope I've given you enough to think about and some practical things that you could do. What do you think?
Yeah, you have. That's a lot of really great advice, and I really appreciate you taking my call and answering and trying to help me out.
You're welcome.
You're
well, we're here to help, Molly. If we can do anything, we're here to help, and I'd be delighted to talk to him if he felt like doing that.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome. Hang in there. Oh, I can imagine that's difficult, but hang in there. 888-914-9149. How about Alexander now in Stockton? Hello, Alexander.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. So my question was, what happened to Mary's body in heaven?
Well, it's there in heaven, just like your body is there in whatever room of the house you're in. So she's there seeing God face to face. Jesus is there, the saints, the angels, everybody who's there. And she's there with her body and soul together. Isn't that interesting? Is that what you're wondering about?
Yeah.
Are you wondering about what is it like to have your body in heaven?
What's it like to have your body in heaven?
I wish I knew for sure. I can only guess based on what the Bible says, but it's going to be unbelievably wonderful. So you will experience what it means to be in heaven with God, not just in your spirit, in your soul, but also in your body. So I guess that means that you'll be able to see and touch and hear the things that are in heaven that we can't really fully understand. You'll be able to see God, not only with your soul, but also with the eyes of your body when you get your body in heaven. She already has her body in heaven. So it's not like I don't want to put it that way. It's not like she has her body. She is her body and soul united together, just like you are. It's not like you have a body. You are a body and soul united together, and your body and soul work together. So the same is true in heaven for Our Lady, but in a way that's hard for us to imagine. It's just so amazing and so wonderful. Let me give an example, Alexander. Do you think it would be possible to explain, if there was some way you could talk to, like a baby who's not born yet, do you think it would be possible to explain to an unborn baby what it means to see fireworks on the 4th of July?
No, I don't think so.
Neither do I. Do you think you could explain to an unborn baby what it's like to have a delicious hamburger or a piece of pizza?
No.
No. And it's not because you couldn't explain it, but because the little unborn baby could never understand it. It wouldn't mean anything. You know, like if you got an A on your report card, that's a wonderful feeling, right? If you got an A's on your report card?
Yes.
That's a great feeling. Well, you couldn't even explain what a report card is to an unborn baby because he can't understand it. So the reason I'm saying this is because I think that the difference between what an unborn baby can understand about this world and hamburgers and fireworks and getting an A on your report card and all this thing, it's more difficult for us to understand how much better things are going to be in heaven than it is for an unborn baby to understand things like that. You see what I mean?
Okay. Yes.
All right. Does that help you?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Good. Well, do you tell your mother hello and thank you for letting you call me? I'm guessing you're homeschooled, right?
Yes, I am.
Good. Well, keep going the direction you're going in. Keep thinking these deep thoughts. And thank you for calling me. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Today, we'd like to thank Viviana, who is listening in California, for donating her 1975 Mercedes-Benz 450. That's elegant. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Bob now in Highland, Indiana. Good morning, Bob.
Pat, hey, I have a question from way back when you were at Catholic sure. Answers.
Yeah.
I read an article or I heard a debate, I'm not sure which, they were quoting, I guess they were debating about Catholic Bibles and Protestant Bibles or versions of them. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the line, the Catholic spokesman that quote in where he said, Jesus says, it's written, and Jesus goes on and quotes an Old Testament scripture verse.
Right.
And the point being that if you looked in the Protestant Bible, you won't find that line. Look in the Catholic Bible, it is there. And I've been trying for years to remember what that was, what verse I could relocate it.
Well, this is interesting. I'm not readily, I don't readily know what you're referring to. So passages like Matthew 4, verse 4, Jesus says, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. I mean, that's one of the classic examples of Jesus saying that. Not the only one, of course, but I am not aware. In fact, I would go so far as to say there isn't any example of that phrase that's not present in both Catholic and Protestant versions of the Bible. So maybe something is not quite, maybe there's a missing piece of the puzzle here. Do you remember anything more about that?
Oh, it just, at the time where I was working, I had some good friends that were fundamentalists and even Jehovah's Witnesses. And it was a good point because I was trying to show them that missing things. And, couldn't find that.
In other words, they couldn't find it
in the Old Testament. What would Jesus quoted?
Oh, wait. I think I understand. It just occurred to me what you might be thinking of. So in Matthew chapter 23, beginning in verse 1, Jesus is about to launch into his excoriation of the scribes and Pharisees. And he says, he's talking about them being hypocrites, etc. And he says that the scribes and Pharisees sit on the seat of Moses and therefore obey what they teach, but do not follow their example because they're hypocrites. If this is what you're thinking of, this might be it, because here Jesus is invoking an oral tradition from the Old Testament. It's nowhere in the Old Testament about Moses's chair or Moses' seat. And yet Jesus in Matthew 23 is invoking this authoritatively. And he's saying, the scribes and Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore, do and observe whatever they tell you, but don't follow their bad example because they preach, but they do not practice, etc. Is that what you're thinking of maybe?
Don't know.
It'll be hard for me to help you.
Back in the day,
Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the problem. All I remember is that Jesus is quoting something, presumably from the Old Testament.
Well, that's the, I think this is writer, the thing. The reason I think that is because it sort of lines up with what you're saying here. He's quoting not a text from the Old Testament, because there is no Bible verse in the Old Testament that says this, but he's invoking an oral tradition that certainly did exist during that era, but it wasn't written in the Bible. It was part of the oral tradition. And he invokes it with an authority that he binds his apostles to observe. So he says to the crowds and the disciples, the scribes and Pharisees sit on Moses' seat, so do and observe whatever they tell you, but don't follow their example because they preach, but they do not practice. There may be some other thing like this that you are thinking of, but this is the one that comes to my mind. And it's certainly a topic that has come up in debates before. Helpful?
Okay. That might be it. Yeah. Okay. That might be it. It was so long ago that trouble recalling it, but it was a good point. I remember at the time.
Yeah. Well, if this, as you ponder it, if go back, I would say go back and reread the beginning of Matthew 23. If this fits the bill, great. If it's something else or something different, call me back another time. We'll see if we can't ferret that out. Thank you. Let's go to Vonnie in Lakewood, Colorado, that is. Good morning, Vonnie.
Good morning, Patrick. Yes, when I talked to you the other day, I didn't get a chance to let you know that. And so I'm going to say it first off, that I just think you're so knowledgeable and learned so much from listening to you. And you're also very understanding and kind to your callers. And I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you for saying so.
You're welcome. And then I had a couple of quick questions, really, I think. And I didn't get to it the other day either. But what was it? Good Friday. I sort of know why it's called Good Friday, but my daughter was wondering, too, why does the church call it Good Friday?
It's just a term in English. I actually talked about that, I think it was, on Good Friday itself, you know, just this past Holy Week. And I think that's just the reason. It's just the custom to call it Good Friday.
But it's so controversial. Good means good, you know. I know good came of it. Much good came out of it, but...
Well, that's the thing.
Anyway, she wanted me to ask, and she was really curious about it, so...
Right. Well, it's called Good Friday in English. It's not called that in other languages. So the day of our Lord's Passion, which began on Holy Thursday night, and Passion Friday, as it sometimes is called, is a sorrowful day, of course, because of what happened. But the term Good Friday is really just a function of the English language, and it's a custom that became associated with that day in English. So,
as you say,
it is good. What happened there was good, but terrible too at the same time. So, what was the other question, Bonnie?
The other one was about Achan in Joshua 7:15. It says about Achan, all who has incurred the ban will be destroyed by fire. And in verse 20, Achan said he had sinned against the Lord. And in verse 24 and 25, Achan and all his possessions were led off to the valley of Achor, and all Israel stoned him to death. Nothing said he was destroyed by fire. And I was just reading that, and I thought, gee, I wondered about that.
Well, I'm looking at in Joshua 7, where we see this, A-C-H-A-N is the spelling. I'd need to dip into a Bible commentary to give you the answer for that. I don't, off the top of my head, know the answer to that. I wish I did, but sometimes these subtle little things, these little details require a bit of digging, and I don't have that at the top of my head right now, I'm afraid.
Yeah, the only thing, I thought maybe he was meant to eternal fire, you know, so in the death, and then he went to eternal fire or something like
that.
You know?
Possible, yeah.
Well, I do listen to you, but I don't sometimes get to listen to all the hours that you say. You know, but I do enjoy listening to you, and I appreciate getting to talk to you.
Oh, I'm glad, Vonnie. Nice to chat with you, too. And I will add this to my list of things I want to investigate in a good Bible commentary. Thank you for that. We'll go to Jean now in Kensington, Maryland. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm calling with a question about signing or having to sign a statement of faith for a nonprofit. So I recently started volunteering with a crisis pregnancy center. It's Christian, and they welcome everyone to volunteer, but you do need to sign a statement of faith. And as part of that statement, it says very boldly, I believe that we are saved by faith alone. And I know that's not usually how Catholics express it. I know it's a little bit more of a Protestant statement to say that. And only that. And so my question is, can I sign that statement as is, or do I need to add something to it? I don't want to misrepresent myself or go counter to my faith, but I really want to volunteer for this pregnancy center.
Good. So. That's good. What I would suggest, perhaps, is that you maybe cross that out and write in, I believe, and then in quote marks here, that we are saved by grace through faith. This is not of works, lest any man should boast. This is a gift of God. So it's Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 through 9. For you have been saved by grace through faith. So we are not saved by faith alone, but faith is the initial way of entering into that saving relationship with God. But it's God's grace from beginning to end that saves us. It's not my faith that saves me. It's not my works that save me. My faith and my works are gifts from God. They are the results of his grace. And so I'm saved by grace through faith. If I think if you were to write that in there, because you're quoting Ephesians 2, verse 8,
okay,
I would think that would be sufficient. Just say, I go by the Bible, and the Bible says I'm saved by grace through faith. And if you want to, for good measure, then you could put through faith and the obedience of faith, and that is in good works. St. Paul talks about that too. So it depends on how much you want to make of this, but I think if you were to just cite Ephesians 2, 8 through 9, then that would be sufficient, I would think.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. It's been bothering me, and I've been, you know, being slow to turn in my paperwork because of it, because I just didn't want to do, you know, do the wrong thing. So wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for your answer.
You're most welcome. And one little addendum you could put to that would be Romans chapter 1, verse 5. It's where St. Paul talks about the obedience of faith. That's another way of saying faith working in love. So through Christ, we have received grace and apostleship to bring about the obedience of faith among all the Gentiles for his name's sake. So it's a fallacy, not on your part, but on those who think that as long as I have faith, it doesn't matter what I do. St. Paul says, no, it's the obedience of faith, or as he also says, faith working through love. So you're on solid ground if you put anything like that, and they can't argue with it because it's straight out of the Bible.
Right, right. Excellent. Because I know it's one of those things that you know, not supposed to say, or they say, we're not saved by works. It's only by faith. And I know then you get into this argument about it.
Right. Well, the thing is they have it... They're half right and half wrong. You're not saved by works, nor are you saved by faith. You're saved by grace through faith that results in the good works that God created you to do. So what they try to do often is they try to pit these two things against each other and say it's either faith or works. Catholics go with the works. We go with faith. Neither one is true. It's not faith or works. It's grace. And you appropriate that through faith, which is a gift from God anyway. But even when you think about it, even faith is a work, because God is not having faith in himself and then pretending that you have faith in him. It's an actual work of your will. You are doing something, which is having faith in God, in Jesus. And if it weren't a gift of God's grace, then even that couldn't save you. Even that couldn't help you, because you're... If you and I could do it on our own, then we would do it. There'd be no need for Jesus. But because we can't do it, he gives us the grace that enables us to do something we couldn't naturally do, which is to have faith and to have the obedience of faith through good works.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome.
I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jean. I hope you have a wonderful time volunteering for this worthy cause. Tell all your friends there to listen to the Patrick Madrid Show. How about Anna now in California? Good morning, Anna.
Hi, Patrick. Sorry, I'm little nervous. But
oh, it's okay.
I need your advice on a situation that I'm in with my kiddo. Okay. I have a few kids, and my oldest ones are in our local Catholic school, which we really like. What we're coming up against is my kindergartner has a classmate, and I guess this classmate has two, like, lesbian married aunts.
Okay.
And so she will, this classmate will talk to my son about, oh, it's okay to have two moms, you know, or two dads and things like that. And so, you know, my husband and I have done kind of our way of like explaining and, you know, giving examples and being like, oh, here's mom's role, here's dad's role. And that's why we're a good team and all that. But now, now this spring, he's now in T-ball also, and he's also got another lesbian coach who's married to a woman and has like two kids on the team. And my husband's been helping to, you know, make sure like, okay, well, as long as we're focusing on T-ball kind of thing.
Forgive my interruption. We have to take a break in a couple of minutes. So I know you have a question.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell me what that is.
So I want advice on what do I do? How do I explain this?
Okay, go ahead. Was there more you wanted to say about that?
No, he just gets, he gets like almost upset where he's crying like, no, mom, it's okay. It's okay. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to
do. And how old is your son?
He's in kindergarten.
Okay. So he's 5 years old, 6 years old, something like that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is where you have to make a decision. Are you going to let him play on this team? If this is causing him anxiety and problems, it sounds like it might be, maybe the better thing to do is move him to a different team. It's a bit drastic, but at the same time, he's young and he'll, you know, kids at that age, they make friends easily. But I think you're, I mean, I not think you're right. You are right, you and your husband, to tell him this is not right. Two women cannot get married. Two men cannot get married. And tell your son, Jesus said, and this is in Matthew chapter 19. Now, you don't have to tell him that, but you could say, Jesus in the Bible says that marriage is between one man and one woman. But just for your knowledge, that's where he says this in Matthew 19.
Okay.
So Jesus said, one man, one woman. That's what marriage is. Not two men, not two women. So, son, even though there are some people who don't listen to Jesus, and they don't like what Jesus taught, we believe in Jesus. We believe in God. We follow Jesus, and we know that this is true. One man and one woman, Adam and Eve, in other words. God didn't make two men to be married in the Garden of Eden. He made Adam and Eve, and they got married, our first parents. So he wants to be, I mean, he's a little kid, so he wants to be nice to his friends, and he doesn't know, I mean, beyond what you and your husband have taught him. But
just had a quick, like, she's the coach saw my son in his Catholic uniform, and this is where it's really throwing it off, is she's like, oh, we're also Catholic, we go to such and such parish.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, like, I'm listening to everything you're saying and, you know, jotting mental notes. That's where I was like, whoa, oh my goodness. Like, how?
So what's happening here is that they're scandalizing your son. They're scandalizing him because they're confusing him and they're telling him something that's not true. And he's only a little guy. So he doesn't have the wherewithal on his own to sort out what's really going on here, what's wrong with it. That's where you and your husband come in. But we shouldn't expect a little guy like that to be able to figure it all out. So all the more reason, it seems to me, to maybe move him to a different team.
Okay.
Because he's just equipped. That's... You're welcome. He's not equipped. No person that age is equipped to be able to wade into this and figure it out and stand his ground. He's just a little guy. So to protect him, I think that's the better thing. I mean, that's my advice.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope that's helpful, Anna. And
yes.
Call me back in 6 months and let me know how things are going with this, okay?
Okay. Right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye now. We'll take a break. We'll come
right back. Boys are boys from the beginning. If you were born a boy, you stay a boy. Girls are girls right from the start. If you were born a girl, you stay a girl and grow up to be a lady.
Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Thumbs up, Cyrus.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Who is this?
This is the LCD sound system.
Yeah? All right. Thumbs up. You got my approval. Let's go to Natalie. Hi, Natalie. I'm going to stop listening to that song and listen to you. Welcome. Natalie in Salt Lake City.
Yes, thank you. I am a recent ex-Mormon to Catholic convert, and I'm having a hard time trying, thank you, I appreciate it. I'm having a hard time reconciling the agony in the garden. I don't know how much you know about Mormon theology, but basically they believe that like the bulk of Christ's sacrifice occurred actually in the garden, where at the time he took on, you know, like supernaturally everyone who had ever lived and will ever live. Like their sin, their suffering, their pain. So they always turn to that whenever anyone is in any sort of pain. You know, Christ suffered this with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just wondering, some of the readings that I've read about, like what the Catholic belief on the agony in the garden is, it's kind of ambiguous. And I'm just wondering, what do we actually believe occurred in the agony of the garden?
Great question. Great question. And welcome home. I'm so happy to hear that you're in the house of the Father. It must be quite an experience for you. And I have a couple things to say when we get back to that topic in a second. So the Catholic teaching is that the beginning of the Lord's Passion, which extended through, so it was beginning Holy Thursday night, and then through Good Friday, culminating with the Lord's death on the cross. And that all of the suffering that he experienced, beginning with the agony in the garden, was one complete action of sacrifice for us that culminated with his death on the cross. So we don't separate them out, and we don't say that all of it or most of it was accomplished in the garden, but that this was the beginning of the whole sacrifice, the whole passion of Jesus, the sufferings that he went through. And the sufferings in the garden, as we know from the Bible, were so intense, his anguish was so great that his sweat became like drops of blood. And that actually is a very unusual, very rare, but not unheard of medical situation where the blood can get into your sweat glands and come out, beads of sweat with blood in them. But we're told that there was so much of this that they actually fell to the ground. You know, he was dripping, you might say, with this. So the Catholic teaching is that Jesus suffered intensely and far beyond anything we can imagine, and that indeed this whole passion, beginning with the agony in the garden, was for the redemption of the entire world. So as you said, all people have ever existed, all people who existed at that time, and all people who ever would exist, the sacrifice of Jesus is for all. Or as Jesus said in John 3, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And this, of course, encompasses all people at all times. So that's all true. But it wasn't as though, and we don't say, and you really, not you personally, but you really can't say that 75% of his sufferings were accomplished in the garden and the rest of it just sort of followed after that. Ultimately, I would propose to you that the reason that the Mormon Church doesn't look at the crucifixion per se as the pinnacle of the Lord's suffering is because even just the cross itself and the crucifixion itself is in some ways at variance with Mormon teaching. For example, you know, in the Mormon stake centers, there is not a cross present. In fact, you won't find a cross present really anywhere in Mormon meeting halls or anything. You have the spire, and in the temples you have the angel Moroni, but you don't have this image of the cross. And I would say that I am very familiar with Mormon teaching on the topic, and I think a subtext to this issue is the Mormon aversion to the cross and the meaning of the cross and the symbol of the cross. So I'll leave it. I don't want to over answer the question, but that would be my way of responding to that question. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Let me give you a little recommendation, if I may. There's a great group in Utah called Catholic Utah. Their website is catholicutah.org. And it's just a connection of wonderful Catholic folk. They tend to be on the younger side. So, you know, not middle-aged and older, but younger than that, often with families, little kids and things. And so I know some of the people personally in this organization, and if you were to touch base with them, I'm sure they would be delighted to not only welcome you into the Catholic Church, but also to help you kind of get your sea legs, so to speak, and know about Catholic things going on in the state. CatholicUtah.org is their website.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Look forward to talking to you again someday, Natalie. Thank you. How about Richard now in Albuquerque? Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick. Yes, I just recently in apologetic type conversations I've had with some really good friends, the topic of Constantine has come up, and not really sure where some of the dates they're getting are from. And I know you've only got a couple of minutes, but I was hoping maybe you could give me a nice resource that I could refer to refute it, because I internally know what I know, you know, within our faith. However, mm-hmm. being able to express it is very difficult. And, you know, you'd
be able to express what exactly?
Oh, yeah, just be able to express that, you know, what occurred with Constantine may have possibly been, you know, there was a political side, but I also believe that it may not have been totally bad either, that it, you know, it gave freedom to the, you know, the Christian, the Catholic community back then to, mm-hmm. to practice more openly.
Yeah. Don't be the least bit afraid of the Emperor Constantine. There's nothing difficult about it. I'll give you the basic overview. So in the year 325, the Emperor Constantine, who had undergone a conversion without being baptized yet, he got baptized near the end of his life on his deathbed. But he, aside from being baptized, he had experienced a conversion to Jesus, and it involved a mysterious sign that he saw in the sky, that he saw and heard, apparently, "In this sign you will conquer." In hoc signo vinces in Latin. And he didn't really know what this was. It turned out to be what looks to us in English like a P and an X. That's actually the Kairo in Greek. And it's two Greek letters superimposed. And this was referring to the cross of Jesus and Jesus himself. And so when he wound up winning this battle, he attributed it to him coming into contact with this revelation about Jesus. So he quickly began to loosen and eliminate those restrictions against the Catholic Church from the Roman Empire. And he eventually not only tolerated Christianity, but he also made it the state religion. Now, in the year 325, because of the crisis of the Arian heresy, he recognized the problems that existed in the empire and the division. So he convoked this council in Nicaea, and he asked, you know, all the Pope and all the bishops to gather together. Now, the Pope himself did not go to this council, but he sent his emissaries. And it was a good thing, because it was a way to try to rally the troops, you might say, and figure out how are we going to deal with the Arian heresy. And that's what happened in a nutshell. So the Emperor Constantine was a good, positive figure. Wasn't perfect. You know, he still did some crazy things, and God will be his judge, of course. But the main thing is that there's nothing outlandish or difficult in any way for a Catholic to explain the presence of Constantine at that point.
Oh, that's awesome, Patrick. Yeah, I was just wondering if there was, you know, you had a small book similar to your Pope Fiction, in which, you, because they, I feel as though there are a lot of, you know, they'll throw the negatives out there, but yeah. In that particular book, plenty. You did such a good job of refuting.
Well, thank you. So I will give you, if you have your pen handy, I will give you a couple of recommendations. Two books, they overlap on this particular topic, written by Dr. Warren Carroll. Warren Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. The first book is called The Founding of Christendom, and that goes from the year 33 to the year 324. And then the follow-up volume is called The Building of Christendom, which is from 324. So it pivots right on Constantine, goes right up to Constantine, and then continues in the next volume on Constantine. So the second volume is called The Building of Christendom. I would get both if you really want to go deep. The second book is going to give you more details on this issue of Constantine and his role in the early church like that. That might be, if you wanted something comprehensive, that would be good. If you want something that in one volume will talk about some of these issues, I wrote a book called Pope Fiction. So I've got a lot of information in that book, Pope Fiction. Carl Keating has a book called Catholicism and Fundamentalism. And that too has a lot of information on this topic as well.
Beautiful. Thank you, Patrick.
All right. You're welcome.
I appreciate it. I hope your bass playing's coming along well too, by the way.
Of course. I wish I played more often than I do. But you might tell your friends, whoever these folks are that you're discussing these things with, tell them to tune into the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. And they can even call in and we can have a discussion on these topics. But please let them know about Relevant Radio and especially this program. Well, thank you for that. We don't have time to take any more calls just because we're about out of time. So
Man's got to know his limitations.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then, Cyrus.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
Wow. You anticipated my every move.
You're a legend in your own mind.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm your Huckleberry. See, I just changed worlds.
You just switched. I'm not ready for that.
I switched into Tombstone World.
I can only do so much.
Well, you did as much as you could.
Let's do it.
You did as much as you could, Cyrus.
If I thought you were my friend, I just don't think I could bear it.
Well, don't worry about that. And hey, I'll be back again tomorrow, same Pat time, same Pat channel. Please don't miss it. Tune in tomorrow. And between now and then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.
Isn't that a daisy? Now.